Welcome to the Progress Your Health podcast with your hosts, Dr. Robert Mackey and Dr. Valerie Davidson, a husband and wife team who specialize in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and functional medicine. They're here to help you lose weight, balance hormones, and age gracefully. It's their mission to motivate, educate, and empower you to take your health to the next level. And now your hosts, hormone experts, Dr. Mackey and Dr. Davidson.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Progress Health Podcast. I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson. So today we have a question from Maggie that, so on our website, we have a tab on there called Ask the Doctor. So you can click on it and ask your question. And then we get a lot of questions, but we will try to answer it on the podcast. Also, if you go to our website, we are creating a community all about hormones, hormone replacement, perimenopause, and menopause. So we go through the whole thing, but it's going to be a community where it's kind of a safe space where not everybody can see it. You have to actually be a member. So if you're interested, we're creating the community right now. So if you're interested, go to our website, progressyourhealth.com. Put your name on our wait list to be considered for membership.
Yeah, there should be a tab somewhere up at the top, or there's a couple of things that says join waitlist. Just click that tab and it'll bring you to the right spot.
Perfect. So let's get on to Maggie here. So of course we change everybody's names. From Maggie, question, help. And now this is a long question, so bear with me, but I really love the detail. And I think a lot of people will probably also maybe see themselves in Maggie. So question, help. I'm about to turn 44 and entered perimenopause 1.5 years ago. I suffered almost overnight, it seems, from severe anxiety panic attacks, which then led to severe insomnia. My integrative doctor started me on 100 milligrams of bioidentical oral progesterone, and then it had to get increased to 200 milligrams because my anxiety is so severe, and that's what I've been on for about a year now. Excuse me. It has been a roller coaster of ups and downs. Nothing consistent, but it generally helped the anxiety. Recently, though, I've been experiencing pretty severe insomnia where I can't even fall asleep. I might get 0 to 2 hours a night. I haven't changed anything in my routine or diet. Nothing stressful has happened in my life. I take things to help like magnesium, glycine, melatonin, ashwagandha, GABA, calming teas, and more as advised by my doctor to help with this sleep and anxiety. I also have a strict routine of daily exercise. I get sunshine. I don't sleep past 7 in the morning. I don't watch TV or phone late at night. I eat hormone balancing foods and even take Epsom salt baths to help relax my body before bed. Like I said, it's been a roller coaster. But 2 months ago, I started sleeping like I was 20 years old again and getting 8 to 9 hours of sleep for the first time since entering perimenopause. However, it just stopped a few weeks ago, and now I can't sleep at all. My eyes seem wide awake, though my body is exhausted. And I have Xanax and Trazodone as a last resort prescribed for me by my MD, but I really hate using them for lots of reasons. Will this phase pass quickly? Just another ride on this crazy hormone roller coaster, or will I not be sleeping for a while? Is it other hormones now that need to be addressing? I don't see my doctor until June and it's April, and I know how much sleep is crucial for balancing hormones, so I feel like my body is working against me and everything I've been doing to balance these hormones. I'm a stay-at-home mom of 4 and would love even a few hours of sleep at this point. I just had my lab work done, some cortisol and adrenals, and she goes into some of the numbers here, which we can get into. There's no units, so every lab has different units, so we'll get into that a little bit later. But it does, but as she's saying here, all my hormones, all my adrenal hormones, like cortisol, were high in the evening, high at night, high in the morning, and afternoon, it looks like it was low. My DHEA sulfate is in good range, and any advice would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, so you're listening to all that, and it seems sort of like a little mystery. And then until she says she's a mom of 4 kids, and then it's sort of like, oh, okay, now we know exactly what's going on, right? She's got a little bit of on her plate. So not only does she have 4 kids to take care of, but she's not sleeping on top
and
of that.
She's in perimenopause.
Yeah, right. So that's just a disaster all the way around. I really feel for Maggie's situation, but you're right. We've seen this so many times.
Yeah, it's so common. You know, you know, women, especially having kids, I mean, that's a lot of work. So she's a lot of work. The hormones are changing because she's in perimenopause. And I would say probably the first thing that you notice in perimenopause is the sleep. The sleep is a big one. Irritability and mood go in there as a close second. Of course, there's some period issues that can happen here. She doesn't say anything about her periods there. So perhaps those maybe not as high on the list as that insomnia, but the sleep is a big one. And anxiety, believe it or not, hormones have a huge effect on not just your mood, but really on anxiety. So while, like I was saying, a lot of, you know, I loved her detail here. I know it was a long question for me to read, but I'm sure a lot of people can see themselves in Maggie.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, you and I talked to a lot of moms like that, you know, whether they're stay at home or working, or stay at home and working, one of the, you know, whatever the situation is, and they're all just completely stressed out. At least that's the impression that I get. They're just running all day long, got a million things to do, and they get no time for themselves to decompress, either daily, weekly, sometimes monthly. I'll ask them, do you ever get any time for yourself? And they're like, oh, I get like an hour a week, you know, like they get this very little time. And usually that is exercising. The gym is when they say, oh yeah, well, I go to the gym. That's like my happy place. But you're still stressing your body. That's not decompressing. That's not rest and relaxation. That's not giving your adrenal glands a break from, you know, the constant stress of being a mom.
So there is, you know, one thing that you'll see, especially with that perimenopause, is the progesterone drop. So I'm glad that she did start that progesterone, but the cortisol does go up. And what, I mean, granted, there are, cortisol can go up for all of us, no matter how old we are, whether we're 20 or 70 years, you know, but this is like a really common scenario is, you know, a woman hits her mid 40s, that progesterone drops, the hormones start to change, life becomes, it's almost like their stress threshold gets shorter, and then that anxiety goes up, that cortisol goes up, and then they can't sleep, which then makes it perpetually worse. I'm not really sure about what happened when she said for a couple of months ago she was sleeping like a 20-year-old. Now she's back to not sleeping.
Sleep deprivation. Maybe it just caught up with her and she just needed some sleep for a little while.
You know, when you're in your 40s, sometimes you ovulate and sometimes you don't. Sometimes you're making, you know, we're always making low progesterone, but sometimes you're making a good level of estrogen. Sometimes you're making too much estrogen and sometimes you're making a little bit less. So there's probably something with her estrogen there along with that cortisol. And probably, like you said, she had been had such a sleep debt that her body just had to catch up.
Eventually, once you're sleep deprived, eventually your body is going to cash in on that sleep debt. You're going to have to make up for it at some point. You don't just get rid of a sleep debt. It does need to be paid back at some point. But it's too bad for her situation that it didn't actually last too long. Now, I just heard, we were actually listening to a podcast this morning about trazodone. I don't like Xanax. I think Xanax is a terrible idea for someone sleeping. And I've always been a little bit opposed to trazodone, but I heard Dr. Atiyah, we were listening to a podcast this morning. He was talking about trazodone. He takes trazodone himself. Says that it's, you know, it was originally created as an antidepressant, but it didn't work that well as an antidepressant because it made everybody tired, right? I mean, you know, it's not going to do you well, really, you know, very well during your day trying to function if you're falling asleep at your desk or, you know, you can't get your tasks done on a daily basis because you're so tired. But from a sleeping standpoint, you know, he sort of made it seem like it's, you know, doesn't have too many side effects. The cost benefit ratio is actually not too bad.
I've had a few patients taking trazodone and have done well, no issues. And I've had a few that did not like it at all. And I do feel like,
That'd be the same thing with anything like that. There's going to be some that do fine and some that just don't.
Well, just like also too, a lot of women I find can't tolerate melatonin, but a lot of men can. Of course, a lot of women can't tolerate Ambien. I think some, and they've done studies, especially with Ambien, I'd have to find it, that women taking Ambien by noon the next day, they still had it in their system, but men didn't. And is that body mass? Because a lot of times, you know, with big pharma, they just give you the same dose for a 300-pound man and a 100-pound woman. Here's the same dose.
Maybe cytochrome P450 system, liver detoxification.
Yeah, something to do probably with, you know, maybe the way we metabolize things. So I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't jump out and say, okay, girl, take the trazodone, sleep well. I wouldn't say that. That might be more of a Band-Aid for, I would say for Maggie, it's more about trying to balance all these hormones because it's not just that she can't sleep and she's having anxiety. It does look like she's just got a lot on her plate. We have to like balance those hormones, balance those adrenal glands so that she doesn't burn herself out. Because at some point she's going to get to burnout mode where it's, she's going to be in bed the whole day.
Or it's going to turn into some kind of a chronic illness of some sort because of all that stress and pressure on a day-to-day basis. Now she did say, I'm trying to find it here, but she'd say, here she goes. She goes, my eyes seem wide awake though my body is exhausted, right? So you have an overactive mind, but an exhausted body. That's what people would normally have referred to in the past as adrenal fatigue. The fact that she's not sleeping, even though she did some kind of a saliva test, the fact that she's not sleeping, you know where her saliva levels are, right? Or her cortisol levels are. She's not sleeping because her cortisol levels are through the roof. Otherwise, she'd be able to sleep at night or, at least proverbially be able to shut the power off. So she's got a very classic, which I think is very common in the 21st century in America, is to have that reverse diurnal curve. Your cortisol is supposed to be high in the morning and low at night. Hers is low in the morning. I'm sure her getting out of bed in the morning.
She says she doesn't sleep past 7.
Yeah. Well, then she's probably one of those type A, granted people don't use the moniker of type A personalities anymore, but the ones that are very task oriented, like they can get things done. They're good at, staying, like a doer, a mover and a shaker. Like they can just get things done. I'm sure in her house with 4 kids, it's like a well-oiled machine, I would imagine. They one, don't sleep very well in the first place, but two, they can wake up in the morning without the sleep deprivation the night before bothering them too much. Okay, they have the brain wiring they have, they're just able to still get up and function normally, even though they just had, 2 hours of sleep the night before, where everyone else, morning comes and they need a crane to get them out of bed.
And in some ways, I could see that happening to her at some point, because it does look like a little bit of, road to burnout. She is just go, 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 not sleeping. Anxiety is so exhausting. Even if she did sleep, I'll tell you, anxiety is like one of the worst feelings. I'd rather sprain my ankle or something. Anxiety is truly exhausting. Your body is feeling this anxiousness, yet you're not, running from a bear. That's why a lot of time people with anxiety say they're so tired, because they really truly are.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I would say I want her to sleep, but we also want to find that balance. I'm not really sure, with her progesterone, I love that her doctor put her on progesterone, but we don't have a lot of details here. Went from 100 to 200. It might've helped a little bit, but it didn't look like it did too much. I would almost say probably switch. I'm feeling, because it was she's at 100 and then it jumps straight up to 200. She's probably on Prometrium, which is a instant release kind of big pharma progesterone. Now, one thing about Prometrium, which I'm going to say over and over all through my whole, through all these podcasts, is it does have peanut oil in there. So if someone's allergic to peanuts, you can't take it, but it's an instant release that it might be that she needs a sustained release. So that it's, because sometimes that instant release, I think it can stimulate some anxiety in some people that we,
sure. We've seen it a lot over the years.
Even though typically progesterone itself is supposed to help raise up GABA and lower cortisol, so it's supposed to be relaxing, but something about that instant release can sometimes go the other way in people. So that could be an issue. So I would definitely switch her to a sustained release. And I'd like to hear your take on this too. She's 44. I'm sure she's still cycling, even though she's not mentioning it, is actually cycling her progesterone a little bit. We're even doing like 100 milligram sustained release bioidentical progesterone for the first half of the month, and then jumping up to 200 for the second half of the month. Sometimes when you do it that way, I've gotten some better results with sleeping and for the anxiousness.
Yeah. So you keep, so a woman's body does not make, so if your cycle is 28 days long, which some it's a little bit less, maybe a little bit more. But let's just say for argument's sake, 28 days, the first 14 days, for the days 1 through 13, let's assume that ovulation is happening on day 14. She's 44. She's got 4 kids. So she's probably still ovulating. She's already got 4. So she's probably still ovulating. So days 1 through 13, the body does not produce any progesterone at all. All right. So then you ovulate. Ovulation is what initiates the release of progesterone from the ovaries. And that continues then until the period starts, and the whole process starts all over again. So your idea, you and I both cycle it a lot. Usually I've noticed that you cycle it because it disrupts their period. right? So you're sort of forced to have to cycle a little bit because 200 milligrams all month starts to mess up their cycle a little bit.
But then, like you were saying, in the natural, you know, in a natural 28-day cycle, you don't make much progesterone in the first half of the cycle. Now, I still would want, you know, a perimenopausal female loves taking their progesterone the first half of the cycle. I wouldn't take that away.
Right.
But the last half of the cycle, that progesterone is supposed to, in a perfect 28-day cycle, progesterone is the highest at day 21. But what you find in perimenopause is that progesterone does not go up that high in the last half of the cycle. So that's why I add that extra in that last half of the cycle, that they just seem, it really helps that especially that PMS, any of those, if you're getting any night sweats before your period, that I think.
If she's irritable.
Yeah. Oh, that's a
given.
I'm
sure with her four kids and her husband, she's probably a little, and no sleeping, she's probably snapping and losing her temper. She probably feels guilty about it too. She's probably losing her temper all the time.
Well, and that's what happens is that your stress threshold gets shorter and then, you know, your cortisol's up, your progesterone's down, and your patients in response, you can get sharp and snappy. And it's not that they mean to, because, you know, that's not our nature, you know, or this probably isn't, you know, Maggie's nature to be crabby, but when they are crabby at, you know, someone that they love, then they feel bad, and then it's just this vicious cycle. So I do like the idea of maybe having Maggie do a sustained release, no Prometrium, but a sustained release bioidentical progesterone, 100 milligrams the first half of, you know, day 1 to 14, and then day 15 to her next period, whether it starts on day 26 or day 35, she takes 200.
Yeah. I mean, you and I've done that many times. And for the ones that it works for, it works really well for. They don't want to be without it the first 2 weeks, right? So that you just give them a little bit, you give them the 100 versus the 200.
I do have them stop it on their period. So that is one thing I forgot to mention. And you do too. Is that
I don't always have them stop it.
It depends on the patient, but most often on those heavier days, like day 1 to 4, I say stop at day 1 to 4, restart at day 5. So that is one thing, just because you want that whole lining of that uterus to completely slough off. You don't want to keep that uterine lining from sloughing off. And one other thing, like I mentioned anxiety, like I said, anxiety is very common, and anxiety is a terrible feeling. Have you, which I've done before too, is while I'm using that oral progesterone at night, because you use oral progesterone at night, when you use oral progesterone, it does make you, it's supposed to make you relaxed. So you don't really necessarily want to take oral progesterone during the day. It might make you too tired. Often I will have women do a little progesterone cream during the day, like in the morning, to really help level out if there is any of that anxious, you know, that anxiousness. It really can help.
Yeah. I've never done that before, but that's
because the progesterone cream doesn't necessarily make you sleepy. Some women it does. I mean, but most often it's not necessarily one of the key aspects about progesterone cream, but it can help with that GABA and that cortisol and that anxiety. Is just doing a little bit of, you know, dermal or, you know, topical progesterone cream, applying that in the morning can be really also nice to help with some of that anxiousness she might be having during the day.
Yeah. Certainly anxiety and panic attacks, certainly a full-blown panic attack. Now, there could be a little bit of, maybe, I'm just speculating here. She makes a comment about eating a hormone-balancing foods. I don't know what that means. Do you know what that means?
Maybe cruciferous vegetables to help with DIM and 3-indole carbinol.
Yeah.
Foods that aren't going to spike her blood sugar, which is good for the cortisol.
Well, that's what I would interpret it as, is hormone balancing would be sort of blood sugar stabilizing foods, right? And I'd be kind of curious.
Foods, yeah, I'd be good for the liver, beets.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Asparagus. I don't know if she's eating any beets.
I love beets.
Well, yeah, I know you like beets, but wouldn't consider beets to be a hormone balancing food. I think if she's not doing it, I would recommend doing some protein for breakfast.
That could be.
So protein only for breakfast, right? So in these kind of situations, when your body is dry, is being driven by adrenaline all day long because you have 45,000 things to do, you're not hungry. You don't have much of an appetite because you're just living off of cortisol and adrenaline. And you wake up in the morning after kind of a rocky night's sleep feeling almost a little nauseated, like you're just not very hungry. So then, you know, the whole blood sugar insulin roller coaster, the whole blood sugar cortisol roller coaster is sort of, you know, kind of starts right off the bat. So what we're using in some ways is food as a way to sort of control some of those blood sugar balancing hormones. So protein, I would say, I was just listening to something the other day, 30 grams of protein for breakfast. 25 to 40 is what I would actually say, which for most women, that's a lot of protein.
I don't do that much protein.
Yeah, but you're also not sleeping for 2 hours a night either.
That's so much protein.
Yeah, right. But
I mean, I love to eat, you know, three eggs in the morning or maybe...
Oh, three eggs, that's, 18 grams.
I guess
that's
so, yeah.
That's 18
but when you're
grams
saying
of protein.
30, that's a lot of...
I'm making a point on purpose because she's sort of at her wit's end, right? Yeah, and yeah. She's talking about this flipped curve. So she has low cortisol in the morning, high cortisol at night. She's awake all night long. She can't shut the power off. So we have to sort of, using a few different things... progesterone clearly is not working. Trazodone is not going to be the holy grail. It's not going to get her back to sleep. So it does have to be a little bit more of an all-day approach to get that cortisol level to drop in the evening. Now, she is doing a lot of things right. She does mention exercise. So I prioritize exercise below sleep and stress. If your sleep quality is poor, which hers certainly is, and your stress level is high, then you have to sort of put... specific exercise, you can't be doing it on a regular basis if you're not sleeping on a regular basis. You have to wait until your sleep sort of improves and you come back to the exercise. Now, maybe walking or something, I wouldn't be doing a bunch of, a high heart rate type exercise because that potentially is only going to make those things worse. And if you are going to exercise, no matter what it is, I'd be doing it preferably before 10 o'clock in the morning, certainly no later than 2 in the afternoon. And I think that's even too late. I'd say closer
to Maggie.
Noon or before, because now you exercise, your cortisol is going to go up and it's going to potentially make it harder for her to, again, be able to, shut the power off.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You're right. That protein, like I was saying, it's kind of hard as just maybe me being a female, it is hard to try to get in 100 grams of protein. It's like a job. But I do think that that's probably a good idea for Maggie is to just check some of her grams of protein, having grams of protein in the morning, doing the exercise. I like that she's, open to trying some of these supplements. Like she said, magnesium and the glycine and melatonin, those are all really great. The one thing you and I talk about a little bit is that magnesium L-threonate. Because I take magnesium citrate at night. That's good for the bones, but it also helps with bowels. That's one thing for citrate. Magnesium glycinate is nice for the muscles, but magnesium L-threonate is also, it can cross that blood-brain barrier and help bring down cortisol in the brain. That would be one maybe little piece of the puzzle to, is to find out what type of magnesium she might be taking.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. On the market today, there's what? Half a dozen forms of magnesium. I mean, literally,
they all have their different jobs.
So I know we recommend, you just mentioned three. We recommend, I think there's at least three or four different types of magnesium we use for each of them. It has its own specific usage. Magnesium L-threonate definitely is the more sleep specific one, I think it's kind of like a patented 166 milligrams per three capsules. And when you're trying to get the sleep response, so I usually, she mentioned eyes wide awake, body's exhausted, right? That is a classic flipped curve kind of a presentation. They're exhausted in the morning, their cortisol is low, which is why they're exhausted in the morning, and they can't sleep, which is why their cortisol is elevated or the cortisol is making them not be able to sleep. You want to be able to flip that around. You want to raise the cortisol in the morning and then... By raising it in the morning, you're hopefully sort of suppressing it at night. Because if you just put it all towards suppressing it at night, that can be sort of a challenging thing, a way to approach it. So like you said, the things she mentions, phosphatidylserine, magnesium, glycine, those are all for sort of cortisol suppression. But she could also probably benefit from a little bit of that cortisol stimulation in the morning.
Which would be the exercise.
Which would be possibly the exercise. Mm-hmm. Other adaptogenic herbs, like we're big fans of licorice root. We like to use licorice root solid extract, which is like, literally, it's like syrup. It's like blackstrap molasses. It's not really for everyone. I think you're going to get a better response from something like that than you are going to get from using a licorice root capsule of some sort. Mm-hmm. Right. possibly some other adrenal adaptogenic herbs, maybe even some adrenal glandulars first thing in the morning. And one of my favorite B vitamins is pantothenic acid, vitamin B5, kind of at a little bit of a higher dose, sometimes above 1,000 milligrams, as a way to kind of prop up that cortisol level. And then hoping by doing that in the morning, you're going to have an automatic suppression of the cortisol at night. Then plus you do all those other things, the magnesium, the glycine, the, you know, the phosphatidylserine, and now you're, you know, with some progesterone, maybe with some trazodone, you know, at least to get you sleeping in the short term. You can always get rid of it later on. But once your brain is sort of used to sleeping, then you should be able to hopefully be able to continue that kind of behavior. But just like the Xanax, I would not really even experiment with the trazodone. I don't know the habituation of trazodone. Do you know anything about that? Like
no, I don't.
People get stuck on it, they can't get off of it kind of a thing?
I'll have to look that up because I am curious about that. Because some, you know, I love the supplements. You know, it's like that intervention. You start with the lowest intervention, you work your way up the top, maybe some of those pharmaceutical medications, surgeries at the top, you don't jump right up there. Granted, Maggie's been dealing with this for a while, and I'm sure she's got a huge sleep debt, and then with that anxiety. So like you said, maybe in the short term, get sleep over not getting sleep. But I, like you said, I love all the supplements. One thing that I know that you and I have noticed in our practice is GABA, like using PharmaGABA, I get a much better response using PharmaGABA over using GABA. Just something I've noticed.
Yeah, it's a low molecular weight size, so it actually is able to cross the blood-brain barrier, so your brain can, or the intestinal barrier, so your body can actually do something with it. And GABA, when you're having anxiety and panic attacks, I mentioned panic attacks earlier, thinking that there could be a potential blood sugar component to that.
Absolutely.
But then again, if you're having anxiety on a regular basis, that also means that your GABA is sort of deficient in some respects. That's why, because GABA is a very powerful inhibitory neurotransmitter. High cortisol all the time is going to lower your GABA levels. That's where the progesterone comes in. The progesterone can raise your GABA levels. Granted, it's not necessarily working perfectly for her. But like I said, that we're just trying to round out over the course of a full day, a good protein-focused diet, not a lot of refined carbohydrates. I would not be doing a lot of liquid calories of any sort. What I would consider to be a hormone-balancing diet, and then hopefully that gets her at least sleeping a little bit on a regular basis, right? I mean, how many people have we seen like this over the years?
So many. What do you think about inositol? I've had some good results with helping turn off the brain with inositol.
Yeah, my inositol. I mean, for some, when it works really well, right? They just like, oh my God, this is like the best thing ever. And then others like, I don't really notice much, right? So it's the unfortunate part is when you're trying to do it, you know, through a functional approach, there's not really a one size fits all, which is sort of what we say on almost every podcast, right? There is a little bit of a trial and error. There is a little bit of finding out what is going to be the sweet spot, you know, that is going to get the result that we want. I'm sure she's got to be miserable not sleeping on a regular basis. It sounds like it's not for lack of effort. It sounds like she's really trying to do a lot of things here. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe she's, doing too many things, just out of desperation. But how do you tell someone not to do some of those things if they're not sleeping?
Oh, well, and it is a little bit of like when you're sleeping at night, but you can't sleep. And then you look at the clock and you of course count down how many hours it is till you have to wake up. It like that makes your anxiety go up. That makes you angry.
Oh, well, she got 4 kids. So you know that she's got a laundry list. I'm sure she's waking up in the middle of the night, just thinking about the things that she's got to get done. So it just ruminates in your mind.
Can't sleep. But knows all the things she's got to get done, but I'm not sleeping right now. It's just like this vicious cycle.
Totally. Yeah. So yeah, you're just like trying to hurry up and get to bed, but then you're anxious because you got to hurry up and get to bed. You only got a few hours left and the whole thing just kind of perpetuates,
Our brains are so, can really mess with us. What is it? Our brains mess with our brains. I actually have a lot of patients that when they wake up in the middle of the night and start ruminating about everything they have to do the next day and then thinking, oh, I only have 3 more hours or 4 more hours before I have to wake up. I actually will, if they can tolerate melatonin, I'll tell them to put melatonin beside their bed and chew that up, more a chewable so that it can go into your system really fast so it can, get you back to sleep. Or even PharmaGABA, you can get PharmaGABA as a chewable tablet. Then you wake up, it's 1:30 in the morning, chew up a couple of tablets of that, and that can help you go back to sleep.
Yeah, we used to use a product from a company called Neuroscience called Cavanase.
Oh, yeah, that went off the market.
It was like 2016, 17?
2017, yeah.
17, mm-hmm. 2018. It had an ingredient there called Fenugreek, which for whatever reason they decided was not, you know, sellable anymore. And we had really no idea, but all of a sudden people, because we sold it on our website, people were just sort of clamoring for this, you know, Cavanase. And now you can't get it anymore.
It did help with sleep. I never had any negative side effects at all. No. I know in huge doses, there were some issues about it. I think that's what it was. You could use it as like a drug, like in huge, but huge doses as the small little supplement we were doing. I actually had lots of people that really liked it. And then lots of people that said it didn't do anything. Yeah. You know, it's individualized.
It's used for sleep and anxiety. So, you know, she seems like she could be a good candidate for something like that.
Now they, neuroscience does have a Cavanase on their, you know, they sell it, but it doesn't have Fenugreek in there.
No, it was really all about that one ingredient. And now it's just not, the same thing, which is unfortunate because that was, we didn't really realize how popular it actually was until you couldn't get it anymore. And then because of our website, people were, because of our online store, people were reaching us. When is it back? Do you have any available? Do you have any in stock? And like, oh my God, this is pretty incredible.
We use it with our patients when I was in practice.
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, we use it with our patients, but I'm saying people just reaching out to us, you know,
trying to find it
yeah. because you I couldn't get it that. Anywhere. That's yeah. Right. It was very interesting. I mean, she's really on, the right track in a lot of ways. It sounds like her, her doctor is, doing some good things with her. It's really unfortunate that when you're doing all those things, it doesn't really quite work the way you want to. She's asking if this is a phase. That's the thing. You can't really predict
perimenopause is a phase. Puberty is a phase. Menopause is a phase. It's not, you know, crossing a line in the sand and you're in one or the other. So it does sound like she is going through a little bit of a roller coaster. I would first, like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, I would change up her progesterone.
Yeah. Certainly in a sustained release, and varying the amount. I know you typically don't, but would you ever go above 200 milligrams? Would there be any benefit to that?
I've had, not really. I mean, just maybe that's just my experience. I haven't needed to go over that, truly. I mean, I have a few patients that I do quite a bit of progesterone. It works for them, but that's super individualized. I think more of doing that cycling method or doing the sustained release. Sometimes I'll even, some people do okay on the instant release, but most people seem to do really well on that sustained release.
Yeah. She doesn't mention anything about her cycle. I'd be curious to know what is going on with her cycle. If she's having a regular period, like she says, she's 44. She went into perimenopause a year and a half ago. I'm assuming based on that, when we looked at this question, I'm assuming that 1 year and a half ago is when the sleep issue started.
Yeah, she said it happened almost overnight, it seemed, from severe anxiety, which led to severe insomnia.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that's what initiated her, her knowing that it's been a year and a half. And honestly, I don't know exactly why that is, but that's what I hear from a lot of women. It's like 1 minute, they're fine. And then just like a snap of the fingers, within a few months, they're completely different. Would you have any speculation as to why that is? Is it maybe just they stop ovulating then and their progesterone drops?
No, I think it's all collective, so start one thing's need a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But I don't necessarily find it exactly like overnight. It's
well, not every case, but I've talked to a lot of women over the years and they just seem like it just came on all of a sudden. Now it might not be all of a sudden. It might be a period of 6 months or something, but it seems like it was just 1 minute they're fine. The next minute they're not.
Yeah, no, I would say maybe, like you said, maybe over 6 months or something, they start noticing, well, I've gained a little bit of weight and I'm a little irritable. I'm not sleeping as well. I'm waking up in the middle of the night for a couple hours. I'm having, my periods are different. I'm having short periods, long periods, libido goes away, my hair and skin. And I think it's kind of a whole collection of things that start to accumulate. And they're like, what happened?
Let's just, speculating for a second. If her cycle was sporadic, would you consider using any biased or any estrogen?
I think we'd probably want to do some, she's 44. If she's missing periods, then we do a follicle stimulating hormone, do an FSH check to see, where she is in perimenopause and menopause.
Yeah. I would bet, based on her symptoms, it's probably, in the mid teens to the low, mid thirties, somewhere in there. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. She doesn't say anything about sweats or doesn't even say anything about weight gain. Or periods, it's really that anxiety and that insomnia. And she could be having some of the other things, but this is like, the big thing, the the big one.
Yeah. So a little bit of a tough situation. Hopefully that was helpful for Maggie. You know, like I said, look into a flipped curve, you know, some things to support. When you're supporting the adrenals, you're really supporting the HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, which is, you know, the way the brain and the ovaries the brain and the adrenals are sort of connected to each other. So when we talk about adrenal fatigue, which in some ways this case is sort of an example of that, more adrenal dysfunction, we're really talking about HPA axis dysfunction. So some of those adaptogenic herbs earlier in the morning, possibly pantothenic acid, possibly some adrenal glandulars. I say possibly because we don't know enough about her to say that those would be beneficial. They could make her feel totally worse, right? They could be exactly the opposite. That's why it is a little bit of trial and error. And you kind of ease your way into some of those things and to see if you're able to get any benefit. And now things start to shift. You go from sleeping at none and no hours a night to, you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours a night. And then if you're able to do that, you can kind of work on it from there. So any last final comments or suggestions for Maggie's situation?
No, I certainly appreciate her taking the time so that we can, you know, read her question and have other people probably are noticing they might have some of these aspects too.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be helpful.
So until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Progress Your Health podcast. If you like what you've heard on this podcast, please give us a positive review on iTunes. This allows us to spread our message, grow our audience, and help more people around the world. For more information, visit our website at progressyourhealth.com.